replace the usual timeline of cosmology, where we are here today. It's the time of intermatter radiation. And inside of Big Bang cosmology, there's just a Big Bang. Now we insert the period, which lasts between two times, which I call T sub I and T sub R. And in this time interval, the universe is supposed to expand exponentially. So the scale factor is e to the th, the Hodge constant. This is the period of inflation. So that's the idea. So last time we also saw that this hypothesis that there was a period of inflation in the very early universe can address some of the problems of standard Big Bang cosmology. Now, if we take a conservative point of view, a very conservative point of view, namely we don't want to modify gravity, we just want to modify matter, then I showed you last time that if we want an equation of state, a scale factor that grows exponentially, then we need the pressure to be equal to minus the energy density, or almost equal to the energy density. So, and then last time I also wrote down what the energy density and what the pressure is for a scalar field. And these formulas I'll write down here because I'll be using them again. So the energy density for a scalar field is kinetic energy. Plus tension energy, plus the potential energy, and the pressure is gets contributions from all of these three energies, and these are the expressions. And so the key thing that you should see from these equations is that if you want to achieve P approximately to minus rho, then we need the energy density in this scalar field to be dominated by the potential energy. So let me now turn briefly to discuss models of inflation. The bottom line is that there is no convincing model of inflation. That will be the bottom line. And therefore, people are still trying to construct models of inflation. So therefore, it is important to step back and to see what were the problems in proposed models of inflation. So let me start with the first model of inflation, old inflation. This was Alan Guth's initial model, and he realized it immediately that it did not work. This model was based on a scalar field with a potential with a metastable vacuum, false vacuum, and a true vacuum. So the assumption was, Alan's assumption, was that the scalar field starts out in the false vacuum. The potential is fairly steep. The scalar field is confined there, even if it has tension and kinetic energy initially. These energies will redshift away because the universe is expanding, so these two terms will become unimportant. Therefore, the potential energy will dominate, and therefore you get inflation. And then, after a long period of inflation, the scalar field will tunnel, and you will rapidly relax into the true vacuum. So I mentioned a lot of words and one drawing. And there are going to be no equations here. But there's going to be another drawing. And this drawing is going to be, let me make one digression. So why did Alan assume that the scalar field would start out here and not here? Well, the reason was thermal corrections. And so let me talk a little bit about these thermal corrections, because they will be important also for new inflation. So Alan goes to a second curve, which he called the finite temperature effective potential, Vt of phi, which at high temperatures has this form, and for low temperatures, for zero temperature, the finite temperature effective potential is this form. So now for those of you who are mathematically inclined, let me pose you a homework problem. Anyone who studied field theory knows that the finite temperature effective potential is the density associated with the Legendre transform of the partition function. So now anyone who studied classical mechanics knows that the Legendre transform is convex. Legendre transform of any function is convex. This function is not convex. What's the resolution of this puzzle? The resolution of this puzzle is that for the physical applications which are being considered in cosmology, this is the right potential to use, and therefore the mathematically defined effective potential is not the right thing to use. So part two of the homework problem is find out why. This is a challenging homework problem for the experts here. So anyway, now one way to understand how this comes about is to consider the Lagrangian of this scalar field phi coupled to other fields. Psi is another field. And I will assume that this other field is in thermal equilibrium. And I will take as my Lagrangian, simple Lagrangian, kinetic terms for both fields, and I'll take a potential V of phi, and then I will take interactions, an interaction term, simplest possible interaction term. So now I will assume that psi is in thermal equilibrium. So what I will do is I will take an expectation value of L, and by this I
mean you mean psi or chi?
I mean psi in thermal equilibrium.
So what is the origin?
Oh. Chi is psi.
Chi is psi.
Chi. Thanks. So chi is in thermal equilibrium, and so I take the average by integrating over the field that's in thermal equilibrium. And what I will get is is in thermal equilibrium, I can replace this by t square times a constant. And what I've derived is the fact that in thermal equilibrium, the field phi will evolve as if it were in the presence of a different potential, of a corrected potential, which is vt of phi. And you see that vt of phi has an extra mass, which is a mass which is some constant times t squared. So that's the origin of this finite temperature effective potential. And you see thermal equilibrium of some fields is crucial to this argument. This interaction coupling constant has to be strong enough, otherwise it does not make sense. Otherwise this term is dynamically unimportant.
Is there some physical picture on what chi might be in this case?
You could do the same argument just with gauge fields. So, for example, you have a scalar field in a bath of photons. Here I'm just using this other magnetic field. So what I really want eventually I want phi to be the field that gives us inflation, chi I want to be the other matter field, modeled as a scalar field for simplicity.
The offset of the minimum potential from zero comes from V, or does it come from the average of dμ chi, dμ chi?
You mean this offset?
Yes.
This offset is tuned by hand very, very carefully, such that to make the cosmological constant vanish here. And I'll come back to that when I talk about the problems of inflation. Excellent question.
Well, the du chi term, if I average in thermal equilibrium.
Then you get a, you're now referring to the fact that you get a T to the fourth constant.
I should get something, right?
Yes, you get that, but that's not relevant to this discussion. Whether you get a constant or not, it just adds to this unknown cosmological constant problem.
Mm-hmm.
It's irrelevant to the shape of the
constant. Okay.
So this was the justification for these initial conditions. Okay. Now, a space diagram. The reason why old inflation did not work is the following. This tunneling process happens at the end of inflation. Tunneling produces a very small bubble of the true vacuum in a surrounding sea of the false vacuum. So what you get is, after the tunneling, a very small microscopic bubble of the true vacuum, which expands in the surrounding sea of the false vacuum. But independent of how fast this wall will expand at the speed of light, it cannot catch up to the horizon. So I'll draw another space-time diagram, space and time. What's happening, if this is the end of inflation, the tunneling time, we produce a very small bubble of the true vacuum. Even if its walls expand with the speed of light, it will be much smaller than our apparent, our Hubble radius today. So we will produce a small empty bubble of the true vacuum, but it will be an empty bubble. And even if we manage to get bubbles to collide, we will produce something which is extremely inhomogeneous. So old inflation failed because of what has a fancy name, graceful exit problem. You get a too small universe, all of the energy is in the walls.
Why the decay process or the tunneling process has to lead to a small microscopic bubble? Why can't it happen over a microscopic region?
Oh, just for energetics. You tunnel in the least action path. And the least action path is a path that produces you a bubble whose size is given by the particle physics scale. That's Coleman, DeLuccia, Carl Coleman. So this is like a fatal problem of old inflation, which Guth immediately realized. So the second model, new inflation. Was based on a potential which looked like this. Potential phi. So the initial potential which one wanted was a symmetry breaking potential via phi lambda phi square minus sigma square. Then the idea was finite temperature effects localize you here in the early universe. Small fluctuation will then drive the evolution. If you roll slowly, after the initial push, then this term will be negligible. If you have, you are fairly localized, so the tension will be negligible. Even though you're slowly rolling, the potential may still dominate. So in order to make this scenario work, you need slow rolling. And there are slow rolling conditions. And there are two slow rolling conditions. And one is absolutely crucial. And this is the fact that the kinetic energy be much smaller than the potential energy. Otherwise, you don't get inflation. However, there's a second condition which is introduced for simplicity. It is not crucial, but it's difficult to construct models which do not satisfy. So what I'm doing is I'm looking at the equation of motion of this scalar field phi in an expanding background, assuming homogeneity. And homework problem for the students is to derive this equation for the action. So now the second slow roll condition is saying, well, this term better be negligible compared to this term, because otherwise, even if initially the velocity is unimportant, the velocity will soon become important. So let's assume and try to enforce that phi double dot is much smaller than 3h phi dot, the 3h, that term being computed after having that process. So these are the slow rolling conditions. Homework problem 3. So yes, for the students. Convince yourself that if you try to use this potential and satisfy the smalling condition, it implies that sigma has to be greater than n plus, which is not what we would like if we start out from particle physics motivated, standard model motivated initial conditions. So.
Sorry. In order to have a scalar field of this section, the potential T should be less than a critical temperature.
Okay, now.
What's the temperature? Can you give me an order of magnitude?
It's sigma. Coupling constant times sigma. That's the order of magnitude of that critical temperature. We'll come back to issues of temperature in this model. So, therefore, to save this model, you change the potential. And the potential that was used is a little bit more complicated to write down. It is phi to the fourth times log phi squared divided by sigma squared minus a constant. That's the potential. So now what have I done? I've finely tuned the potential so that there is no mass term, no negative m squared contribution here. So this requires extreme fine tuning. I have to set one of the terms that I would expect in the potential to exactly to zero. So then I have to make the potential even flatter by introducing this logarithmic term. Now, the justification for using this potential, now I may do this complete injustice and you can correct me, is the fact that this potential was introduced and discussed in detail by Coleman and Weinberg. It's a well-known potential, the Coleman-Weinberg potential. Okay. So now, you can convince yourself that if these coefficients are sufficiently small, you can satisfy the slow rolling conditions. But the coefficients have to be small. And if the coefficients are small, it means that the field will not be in thermal equilibrium. If the field is not in thermal equilibrium, then you cannot use the thermal arguments which I just gave to set up initial conditions. So the only initial conditions I can say is, if we imagine a hot initial universe, this scalar field ought to carry some of the energy. So therefore, its field should not be localized here, because then it would have zero energy. Shouldn't be localized here. It can be localized anywhere in the phase space of field values for which the energy density is smaller than the cutoff energy density. And the cutoff energy density, well, you give me the cutoff energy density, I will give you the range of phi values. Almost zero measure of initial conditions here. If you include velocities of the scalar field, the measure gets decreased by orders of magnitude. So the challenge for new inflation is, first of all, you need fine-tuning. Secondly, initial conditions are not justified. Same criterion, same criticism applies to models which are essentially new inflation but have a fancy title called natural inflation or supernatural inflation. In my opinion, they all suffer from the same problem. So,
sorry, Rob, just to ask, I mean, so you're saying that initially you need thermal equilibrium for this other field outside horizon scales or just within a horizon?
Within a horizon is enough.
Within horizon is enough?
Within a Actually, within three Hubble volumes, to be concrete.
Ah, well, okay. So that's outside, that's a bit outside the horizon.
A bit, but so, largely
okay, so, okay, so, but then that, doesn't that raise the causal question? I mean, one of the motivations was supposed to be solving horizon.
In my opinion, that's not as serious. So I can come back, let me talk to you about that in private, because this is the issue of initial conditions for certain models of inflation being local attractors.
Okay.
So,
Tony also had this problem of pre-inflation, this model, that we need a homogeneity.
No, it's the same. I would argue that not. We do not. However, we do have some of the problems of pre-inflation, and I'll come back to that. Because we do have an initial singularity.
Why doesn't the, this particular model,
you mean for this particular model with where you want to start out here? No, that is not an attractor in initial condition space. New inflation is not an attractor.
That's what I mean.
Yeah.
So that's another reason for excluding it. Because it's a highly fine tune.
Right. Okay, so.
Just out of curiosity, if there was a local minimum, if at the top of that hump there was a little dip, there was a local, no, the bottom diagram, if there was a little dip there,
that wouldn't
be sufficient?
No, not sufficient.
So you really have to require thermal equilibrium in order to be in that region. Mm-hmm.
Right. Because why should you start at phi equals zero, even if you have a little dip, if you're not in thermal equilibrium? Something has to put you there.
Yeah.
And we have a hot initial universe, so all fields should start out with lots of energy. If you had a different scenario, not inflation, but a scenario in which you have cold initial conditions, the issue of initial conditions would be very different. So. Okay. So, now, the next class of models go under the heading chaotic inflation. So here you take the simplest potential, not motivated by spontaneous symmetry breaking. For example, a potential m squared phi squared. And then you ask, if you start the scalar field off approximately at rest somewhere, then for which initial values will the slow roll conditions be consistent? And then you find that if phi of t0, let's say ti, the initial time, if this is larger than at Planck, that then the slow rolling approximation is consistent. So in chaotic inflation, the action for the scalar field is happening on field values which lie in this region here. So now you might object saying, well, what about quantum gravity? And without supergravity, the response would be If you look at an energy density, which is m^4, to the fourth, then the region where you have energy density smaller than Planck density is given by field values, which can be many orders of magnitude larger than in Planck, namely m to the minus, m Planck divided by m times m Planck. If this is the range of values for which the energy density is smaller than Planck density. So now, so this is Celtic inflation. And the problem of Celtic inflation is that this field is new. It has no justification in standard model physics, or beyond the standard model physics, slightly beyond the standard model physics. Within string theory or quantum gravity, it might very well have some model. Another objection is that in supergravity models with scalar fields like this, there are supergravity corrections which change the potential above this value, make it steep. And therefore, the slow rolling approximation breaks down. So even though this region looks energetically safe, it might actually not be safe. So now there's another point. There's an intermediate point here. And the value of this point is m Planck times m Planck over m to the 1/2 critical value. If the scalar field starts out in this range, then you find that delta phi quantum is bigger than delta phi classical, where delta phi quantum is given by the Hubble expansion of. And delta phi classical is a change of the scalar field value due to the classical equation of motion. So what you do here is, it's a little bit of a strange statement. You're looking at the classical field equation, but then you say there are quantum fluctuations. And what you do is you just take the quantum expectation value of a free scalar field, which is of the order h squared. And then you say that these that this term corresponds to quantum fluctuations which can drive in either direction. So this is a justification for this statement. So now in this region, the quantum fluctuations are bigger than the classical driving force. And so therefore, in about half of space, the quantum fluctuations will drive up the potential instead of down the potential. And that gives a variant of chaotic inflation, which is called stochastic inflation. So stochastic inflation is just another twist on chaotic inflation. And this idea that for certain field values in half of space, you're going up the potential. However, I do not believe stochastic inflation, because you can also show that this naive stochastic equation breaks down for all field values above this. There are terms which this naive stochastic equation misses, which are important in this entire region. These are back reaction effects. That's an aside. I'm going to explain that. I may give a separate talk on that.
What about does this model stable against quantum loop corrections?
Yes, provided that that there are no strong couplings to gauge fields. So if you look at an interaction term in the Lagrangian, which is G phi squared chi squared, or G, this can also be a term coming from the gradient terms, covariant gradient, covariant derivative terms, then provided that g square is smaller than lambda or of the order of lambda, this is the self-coupling constant of the scalar field. So now I've replaced the potential by lambda phi to the fourth instead of this potential. So in order to answer your question, okay, I know the answer in the case that this potential is lambda phi 4, and the answer is that if the interaction coupling constants are sufficiently small, that then you are safe.
Lambda is 10 to the minus 14.
That's right.
So it has to be real.
But I haven't told you that yet. That, oh, I haven't told. Other people have. Yes?
That's serious.
That's it.
As far as fate.
Right. Whether it's fatal or not, I'm not sure, but since my idea is not to defend any particular model, but to show the problems with different models, I'm not going to try to argue that it's not fatal. So that's certainly something you have to be aware of. It means that this scalar field has to be very weakly coupled to anything we know of. But maybe that will happen, maybe that will arise.
What about the size of A?
M means, well, so in order to get slow rolling for field values greater than F plumb, there's no constraint on M at all. The constraints on M will come from demanding that the density fluctuations that this scenario will produce are not too large. And that will imply that the mass has to be smaller than 10 to the 13 GV, as opposed to 10 to the 19 GV. But that's going to come.
Can you repeat, what was the argument that this has to be very weakly coupled to every other form of matter at the same time?
Oh, that's a stability. See, that was a question about the stability of the potential towards quantum correction.
Oh, right.
So again, I answered the question in the case where the potential is lambda phi 4, and where I've use the knowledge coming from the fluctuations that lambda has to be small. And then if the interaction coupling constant would be large, then there'd be a contribution.
I see, but in this case, you're not assuming a lambda phi 4 form of potential. So you're saying it's a very difficult problem for
right.
Slightly different.
But a lambda would be induced, you see. If I don't start out, if I start out without a lambda phi to the 4,
yeah.
The renormalization effects would induce.
Yeah, you put it in.
But you might just as well say they would induce an m squared of Planckian magnitude.
Yeah.
That's essentially the same
yeah.
worry, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess it's a comment. The new inflation, that Coleman-Weinberg form,
right.
is in fact radiative corrections, is in fact what you would expect.
A,
yeah.
But it is a radiative correction with a specific renormalization condition saying that we want.
Right.
M square at phi equals 0.
But I mean, that structural form is what you're going to get from summing the graphs. It's pretty unavoidable.
With the same particular condition imposed.
Well, that'll be the numbers. But the mathematical form
right.
is.
Yeah, it comes. Right. Okay, so then one more model. So let me take away all these special features. Hybrid inflation. So I should mention that hybrid inflation emerges naturally from brain world scenarios. So right now, of all the existing inflationary models, maybe hybrid would be my favorite, but not strongly. So in hybrid inflation, you assume that there are two scalar fields, two real scalar fields. And I will first make a sketch of the potential. Potential. Phi and psi. So I want, for psi equals 0, I want the potential to be chaotic inflation-like. But then what I want is I want, for large values of phi, I want the psi corrections to localize your psi at psi equals zero. But at small values of phi, I want a symmetry breaking shape of the potential for psi. So the idea then is that I want to start out here, or maybe even up here. I will roll down the valley, and once I get to the unstable region, I'll have a spinodal decomposition, a phase transition line, and I'll end up here. So V of phi and psi, it's 1/4 lambda psi square minus m square square. So you see, this is the symmetry breaking potential for psi at phi equals zero. And then I have a small mass for phi. And then I have an interaction term which changes the effective mass for psi at large values of phi. And this interaction is 1/2 lambda pi psi square phi square. So with this potential, I can achieve this kind of picture. And there's a critical value of phi where psi equals zero becomes unstable. And you can work out the value of this critical value. And you find that psi c is, phi c is lambda over lambda prime, m squared. So now, what you also want is you want the energy density during this period of slow rolling, you want this to be dominated by this term, and not by the potential energy of phi. And what that will gain you is that it will gain you the fact that you can get slow rolling for small values of phi. You remember one of the problems of chaotic inflation is that you need a phi greater than Planck to get slow rolling. If you ensure that in this period the potential energy of coming from psi, that this dominates, then you are safe from that constraint. Homework problem to work this out. So what we want, the requirement, is we want 1/4 lambda m to the fourth, so the potential energy coming from this term. We want this to dominate over the phi potential energy at phi equals m Planck. And what we gain now is that no constraints on the value of phi in order to get slow rolling, as long as phi is greater than phi sub c. So that's the advantage.
Now you have two fields and four parameters.
Yep. Right. And small coupling constants in order to get the fluctuation right.
So this more stable constant.
You can arrange it, but I haven't. I can't give you the explicit numbers. That's been looked at.
That's been checked.
Yeah, that's been checked. But again, there are conditions, and the conditions is we know that the constants appearing here have to be small, and therefore the fields which interact with this, with these two fields, have to be very weakly coupled. So again, it's possible to make the model consistent in your way, but it imposes constraints on the relation of this inflaton sector with our world. And I thought that mention one variant of hybrid inflation which is brand new, less than a year old, and this is trapped inflation. And What you do in trapped inflation, you do essentially the same as in hyperinflation. So no new picture, except that the idea is that this field, instead of being slowly rolling, it will oscillate around its minimum. So phi oscillates about phi equals zero with a large amplitude. And this stabilizes psi equals zero until the amplitude has decayed and the potential energy at psi equals zero gives you inflation. Some people call this new old inflation. Coming out of Stanford. Okay, so I think this is what I wanted to say about the models.
Professor, you said oscillates with large amplitude. Does that mean the value of phi is large in these oscillations, or the value of v is large?
Phi is large. So we don't the amplitude should not be so large such that the kinetic term of the oscillations dominates over the potential energy. So that's an upper bound on the amplitude of oscillations. So there's a lower bound on the amplitude of oscillation and an upper bound on the amplitude of oscillations.
Now that bound is to preserve slow rolling?
No, you don't have slow rolling. So the upper bound means you want the potential energy to dominate. That gives you the upper bound on the amplitude.
Oh, for that to preserve the original condition.
Otherwise this dominates over this and you don't get inflation.
Right.
And the lower bound on the amplitude comes from the fact that if the amplitude is too low, then this force coming from the minus m squared psi squared takes over and drives you down the psi potential.
In the new world inflation, does the potential have this title shape in psi positive zero?
It's this
direction of saddle.
This form.
Yeah.
But the basic idea could be generalized.
The potential is similar to the hybrid inflation.
Yeah.
So how does it oscillate about phi equals to zero?
Oscillates like this.
But in
for psi equals zero. The oscillation happens at psi equals zero. So I should add with psi equals zero. So psi is trapped. That's where the word trapped comes from.
So is the advantage of this over new inflation simply that you have a reason to stay at psi equals zero until the decay occurs? You have a reason to believe the initial conditions? Or let me rephrase that as a question. What's the advantage of this over new inflation?
Over new inflation is the initial conditions.
Okay, so new inflation, we have no way of getting the initial condition here.
Here you have. You start out here.
Okay.
The phi is not constrained to be slowly rolling here, so phi will shoot down the potential and it will start oscillating.
Okay.
So yeah.
And you can do this without doing violence to the equation of state, without having phi back yet.
That's the upper bound on the value of the amplitude. And if the upper bound is initially not satisfied, then you will just first have a period of expansion, which is dominated by the competition of this term with this term, and then eventually the amplitude will have redshifted, so that the potential of the sign will be normal.
Oscillations of the phi field do drive the inflation?
No. Oscillations of phi will drive expansion, but non-inflationary expansion. Because during the period where phi is oscillating, So if the what I want in the phase which I call inflation, it's this term in the potential energy, which is dominating all of the contributions to the energy density. So it's potential energy of psi equals zero, which is driving inflation.
So you're saying that...
So can I just ask, summary, what is the status of the one of the aims of inflation, which is to explain why we see thermal equilibrium within a causal path? Has there...
That's next.
That's next, okay.
Right now, what's happening is that all of the energy in the universe is in this scalar field. There's no energy in any of the particles that we know in the universe.
Right.
If you subtract, and if you add, so our universe, in terms of the particles that we know of, is cold, exponentially cold. And now we need to dump all of the energy from energy in this inflaton sector into ordinary particles. That's the heating process, which is called reheating, or terminating inflation. So let me draw a sketch of what we want to do. So now, terminating inflation. So time, here I'll plot energy densities. We have the beginning of inflation, the end of inflation, and the energy density in the scalar field is constant during inflation. That's rho in phi. Let's imagine now that we are talking about chaotic inflation, where there's only one inflaton field, phi. But the energy in radiation exponentially decreases. So this is rho radiation, because of the exponential dilution in space. And what we want is we want to turn this energy back into energy of radiation. So what's going to happen? Inflation will end by the scalar field oscillating. So another diagram. What happens to the scalar field as a function of time during this period of inflation? Ti, Tr. So the scalar field starts out at a very large value. It is rolling slowly. Once it hits a value of approximately m Planck, it will start oscillating about its minimum at phi equals 0. And the idea is that there will be some damping. And this process of damping will convert the energy from energy in phi into energy of radiation. So this is what we want to happen. Wishful thinking right now. So now, can I just go back to your question? The idea is that since the scalar field in our patch is homogeneous, after inflation has redshifted all the inhomogeneities, we start out with exactly the same energy density in the scalar field everywhere in space. This reheating process is a local process, therefore our universe will end up being homogeneous with a homogeneous temperature. So that's the answer you've got.
Now,
Rod?
What is it that guarantees that this is thermal? That there is a uniform distribution is one thing, but that distribution should be thermal?
Yeah.
Is it just be...
Okay, so it's only one step.
Okay.
Big step is homogeneity.
Right.
You'll see that in the process that I described, the initial energy transfer will be completely non-thermal. So after the energy transfer from phi to matter,
yeah,
you'll get a very non-thermal state.
Right.
But it will then thermalize by Newton interactions.
Right, now, because, and okay, but has that been shown that it thermalizes by Newton interactions, or is it just assumed?
Not analytically, but rigorously, but numerically, it's been studied. The transfer process, energy transfer process, has been analytically studied,
yeah,
and that's what I'll show.
Right.
And then the thermalization has been studied heuristically or numerically.
Right, because I've seen the heuristic arguments about sort of orders of magnitude of sort of time scale of relaxation,
right,
being sort of what you want.
Right.
And I've not seen any numerical studies, but could you give a reference?
Yeah, so the people who've done that are Hakopec, Tomislav Hakopec, Brian Green, and Bruce, and then there's also Klebnikov and Kachov.
Oh, you're assuming this chaotic model? Or?
Just to be specific here.
Yeah.
The details of reheating are not very sensitive. So now at one point I'll ask Achim to leave, because I'm going to say something only which is intended for his graduate students only. But so this that's actually just so reheating. So there was the initial analysis of reheating. It is modeled by introducing an interaction between the inciton field and other matter fields, which I'll just treat for simplicity as a scalar field. Inciton, this stands for regular matter. So now, the energy density at the end of inflation is in a homogeneous condensate of the inflaton. So at TR, energy of phi is a condensate, homogeneous condensate, which is oscillating. Now, in the original reheating scenario, this was equated with a collection of k equals 0, k is momentum, quanta. Question mark, because it doesn't really make sense to.
Could you explain again what you mean by the energy of phi is a homogeneous condensate?
Okay, so at the end of inflation, phi is homogeneous, and it's starting to oscillate in a homogeneous way about phi equals 0. That's what I mean.
Oh, true.
Fancy word for a very simple concept. So then what in the original reheating analysis, what was done is you say the phi equals 0 quanta will decay into two chi particles, and you describe this using three-order perturbation theory, lowest-order perturbation theory. So you have the interaction Lagrangian, very simple, Feynman diagram calculation gives you the decay rate.
Yeah, but that interaction is quadratic in phi. So you're putting in a vacuum expectation value for one of the terms of phi in order to get that vertex. Oh, okay.
That's equivalent to it.
Yeah.
So now what you find doing that calculation, well, that's not so important actually. You find that gamma is much smaller than h during inflation. That's the result. And the reason why the decay rate turns out to be much smaller than h during inflation is that you have small coupling constants. So now, what happens to the energy density? Draw again the timeline, and I will plot the fourth root of the energy density. it's going to, during inflation, the energy density is constant. When inflation begins, the scalar field amplitude will start to decay. And in this old inflation scenario, the decay is only efficient once the Hubble expansion rate has dropped, once the energy density has dropped to a value of, once rho to the one quarter has dropped to gamma. Actually, it's, what I want is, I really want to plot H, not this. The Hubble expansion rate, during inflation is constant, after inflation it starts to decay. In this time interval, the energy which the scalar field loses by the decrease in its amplitude all goes into the expansion of space. And it's only once the Hubble expansion rate becomes equal to gamma that the energy predominantly goes into particles. So therefore, the energy density in radiation never becomes comparable to the energy density before inflation. You basically get you get slower reheating. And slow reheating gives you a lower reheating temperature. The maximal energy density which matter has after energy transfer is low. And that's relevant for various issues in physics, cosmology, and thermogenesis. So that's the old scenario. Now the new scenario is based on the realization that it's a very bad approximation to treat the condensate, to forget all about the coherence, and to do an S matrix calculation. So it doesn't do justice to the problem at all. So instead of looking at reheating from the view of Feynman diagram, flat space-time perturbation theory, let's just do classical field theory in an expanding universe. So same Lagrangian to describe the interaction between the inflaton and ordinary matter. But now I will focus on the equation of motion of the Chi field. The equation of motion for the Chi field is this. Is the correction, this is the interaction term in the equation of motion for Chi. I've assumed that there are no non-linearities in the part of the action for Chi. Then I Fourier transform. That's a minus thing. There's a sigma to get the dimensions right. What this equation is, it's a harmonic oscillator equation with a small correction to the mass. And this small correction is periodic in time. So this equation describes the child on a swing, pumping his or her feet. In mathematics, it's known as a Mathieu equation. and it is known to have resonances. So if the value of k is tuned to be commensurate correctly with the frequency of oscillation, then you'll have an exponential instability. Chi will be produced exponentially. So you see, instead of slow, you get fast reheating. And instead of getting a low reheat temperature, you get a high reheat temperature. So now, you can read all about this equation in volume 1 of Landau-Lifshitz. And it was actually when I was a graduate student that Jenny Trashman, was another graduate student, myself, did the analysis. This is 1984. Now, this is all written in volume 1 in Landau-Lifshitz, and you present it to your advisor or to another senior faculty member in the department, and they say, well, yes, it's all written in Landau-Lifshitz. Parametric resonance, yes, clear. So therefore, you don't write it up. So we did write it up 6 years later, in 1990. And obviously, the point is that it has, even though it's very simple mathematics, it makes a big change for cosmology. First of all, I think it contains the physics better because it takes into account the coherent nature of the field. And instead of just doing a more or less flat space-time perturbative analysis, and it gives interesting results, fast reheating, high reheat temperature, as opposed to slow reheating and low reheat temperature. So therefore, it should be published. So message to those of you who are students, if you work on a physics problem and you find some new results based on something which is in volume 1 and Landau-Lifshitz, it might still be very important to write up. Second suggestion, it's also useful to invent a neat name for this. Because our paper was published in 1990, lay there without citations for 4 years, suddenly someone picked it up and gave a fancy name, preheating. And suddenly interest in the subject exploded. And so therefore, if you come up with an invention like that, it's also useful to invent a good name. I still haven't learned how to invent good names. So anyway, this is an invention. Now, to come back to what you asked, Anthony, this process, it populates matter fields with specific values of k. In narrow resonance bands, you get huge occupation numbers. So the state that you get after this type of preheating is extremely non-thermal. And the idea then, and I'll only mention words here because I haven't worked on this, is that due to interactions of these quanta with other fields that you will then get thermal signature. So that's reheating, preheating. You have questions about that?
So the reason why you missed this effect in the previous analysis based on the three-level diagrams is because you ignored the k dependence.
Actually, you find that the different instability bands can be interpreted perturbatively. But if you just calculate a perturbative decay rate, you don't make the connection with an exponential instability.
So in the other analysis, what would
I have
to compute to see this?
You know, I don't know the answer.
Because if you're doing classical equations of motion,
yeah,
that's equivalent to a three-level treatment.
Well, so given a decay rate, how do you know that there's a process that corresponds to an exponential increase in particle number social rate? That's a key link. And the fact that the decay rate is small means that the exponent in the exponential increase in the occupation number of chi particles is not that large. But it's still large enough. So I have to pass on, I can't give you a good answer to that.
When they computed the decay, perhaps they just assumed a constant five.
Yeah.
They were trying to put in the oscillatory nature.
That's true. That's true. They were treating it as like if they were particles of rest.
So you'd have to put in something that captures the correct state first.
Right.
I think it's a notational, but is G and sigma two separate things, or you just split it into a dimensionless times a dimensionless?
Exactly. G is supposed to be this dimensionless constant thing. Sigma is the part of physics.
But we don't have two separate coupling constants.
And you see, nothing in the analysis depends crucially on the specific form of the coupling. I don't need a single well potential. If I have two, if I have a double well potential, I'm oscillating about one of the minima, I still get the effect. Just what this sigma is depends on the specific models.
Oh, I guess, is there any restrictions on the product G sigma in order to make this thing go? In other words, I assume sigma is on the order of a Planck mass or something like that in this picture. Is that right?
No. Well, I would say it's given by the typical particle physics.
Okay. Then what can one say about G if it is?
All I can say is that in the simple models which I've analyzed, the exponent which characterizes the exponential increase is large enough so that the energy transfer happens in less than one Hubble time. That's the key thing that you want to calculate. How long does it take to increase the energy? What's the exponential increase time?
What happens to the vacuum energy?
The vacuum energy goes into oscillations. So initially the energy density in this inflaton field is in potential energy. Once the scalar field starts oscillating, the energy density is a combination of kinetic energy and potential energy. Then it is all drained by this reading process.
So there is no cosmological constant.
No, there is, because I've assumed that at the absolute minimum of the potential, where the scalar field relaxes, at the absolute minimum of the potential is zero. So, I'll do justice to the cosmological constant problem. Where do I?
I mean, if we go back to this natural phenomenon of exponential decay, and we look back now at the hybrid inflation, looks like you're going to have the same phenomena there,
yeah.
Right? So, you're going to have also some exponential. I mean, does it rule out?
No, no.
The inflation effect that it's.
Yeah, this is good.
This is good.
You want,
but you want to stay long enough in the top of the potential, so you want. I mean, some things you want.
See,
to
this process is driven by the oscillations of the scalar field.
Okay.
So you, whatever inflationary model you have, you will be slowly rolling. Particle production will be almost insignificant until you start oscillating.
But
I think.
But if you're. Yeah.
Oh,
I mean,
but I
know. Early
you mean trapped inflation?
Yeah, trapped. Trapped. Then are you really trapped by the natural?
Actually, it's a very good point. That might be a problem for trapped inflation. I hadn't thought about that. Okay. So what I want to do now is to give a brief overview of fluctuations. Fluctuations will actually be the main topic of the next lectures.
I think we run out of tape in about 15 minutes.
10 minutes.
Is that
okay.
Right? 10 minutes.
Good. So therefore, what I talk about problems will not be on the tape. Okay. No, I'm just going to. So let's go back to the main success of inflation. This is the point, the fact that inflation provides a mechanism for producing the structure that we see in the universe. So space-time diagram, inflation, post-inflation. We look at wavelengths For example, the microwave quadrupole, the microwave octopole, and because of the exponential increase of physical wavelengths during inflation, if we trace back cosmological scale fluctuations today in the early universe, we find that they start out at a radius with a wavelength smaller than the Hubble radius. So it's possible to imagine a causal generation mechanism for fluctuations. So anyway, so let's imagine that there's a demon stirring the hot soup of the inflationary universe. The density is the same during this period of inflation. So therefore, by time translation invariance, the demon will be having exactly the same action at different times. So if the demon produces a wave here with a fixed amplitude, the demon will produce a wave with the same physical wavelength and the same amplitude at a later time. These waves will be redshifted. So if you, for a fixed wave number k, call the time when the wave exits the Hubble radius, ti of k, then this time translation argument tells you that the mass fluctuation on a wave, for wave number k, when this wave exits the Hubble radius, that this will be constant. Now, no demon can influence the magnitude of the mass fluctuations while the mass fluctuations are larger than the Hubble radius. So therefore, if you measure the mass fluctuations when they re-enter the Hubble radius, you'll get the same statement. This spectrum is called a Harrison-Zeldovich scaling down spectrum. For experts. Recently, an alternative to inflation has been proposed. Which goes under the names ekperiodic scenario or pre-Big Bang scenario. These are two different scenarios. Both scenarios involve the space-time, which is bouncing, the bouncing universe, in which the Hubble radius is decreasing, increasing. Here there's a bounce, infinite action. And it is argued that there's a demon that produces fluctuations in the contracting phase. But you see here, in this scenario, so you don't have time translation invariance. The Hubble constant, which characterizes the strength of the demon, is changing as a function of time. And so therefore, the density fluctuations will not have the same amplitude here and here. And therefore, they will not have the same amplitude here and here. And therefore, these simple demon arguments, these simple physical arguments, will immediately give you the prediction that in an ekperiodic type model, and in a pre-Big Bang type model, the fluctuations that you get are not at all scale invariant, in contrast to what the authors of the ekperiodic universe claim. Now, was it Rutherford who said that you should be able to explain everything to a bartender? So, you better get your mathematics exactly right. So anyway, you authors of the ekperiodic scenario better make sure that their calculations have absolutely no mathematical errors if they want to claim that the fluctuations turn out to be scaling bound.
What about the singularity t for zero?
Well, that's a problem also for inflation.
Yeah, but what? But oh, I mean, what is their argument then for getting the scaling bound fluctuation?
They have argument number three now, First two calculations were shown to be wrong. Argument three is that you need to do the calculation consistently in 4 plus 1 dimensions. 4 plus 1.
4 plus 1.
4 plus 1. But the fifth dimension is
crucial.
And then you can no longer use the calculations that you did in 3 plus 1 dimensions.
Right.
But then it's no longer this simple fancy universe one. So it's end of aside.
But in the original paper they wrote 3 plus 1, so that was a misprint.
There were vigorous debates at conferences where it's clear that it was not just a misprint. Okay, so now another diagram. Let's look at the consequences of density fluctuations for microwave anisotropies. We are here today for looking at photons coming to us from different directions in the sky. If the universe is homogeneous, then there are no microwave anisotropies. If there are density fluctuations, then the surface of constant temperature of recombination, occurs at different redshifts at different points in space. And therefore the photons lose different amounts of energy in traveling from where they are emitted to us, because they travel different time. So density fluctuations produce microwave anisotropies. And if we look at a fixed angular scale, the magnitude of the temperature fluctuations on this angular scale is related to the wavelength, which corresponds to this distance. So therefore, this prediction of a scale invariant spectrum of density fluctuations makes a prediction for the microwave anisotropies. So, already in 1971, Peebles and Yu calculated this curve for the microwave anisotropies as a function of angular number L. So what you do is you have a temperature map of the microwave background, you decompose in spherical harmonics, amplitude of power as a function of spherical harmonic L. Large angles, small angles. So this red curve is a curve which fixes a value of about 6 cosmological parameters. It's calculated on the basis of inflation. So these curves predicted, for example, by Dick Bond at CETA. So these high precision predictions were available 15 years ago. Now we have the data, as of a year ago, high precision data. And these are the observation points. So you see, this is why you have to take inflation serious, even though all of these scalar field models have all kinds of problems. Inflation did give a prediction which has been miraculously confirmed.
Well,
these are thousands and thousands of data points, which are fit with 6 parameters.
But look, wasn't the Harrison-Zeldovich scale-free spectrum put forward
in
the 70s?
I didn't say that it's the only model that predicts this. The crucial ingredient is a scale-invariant spectrum of density fluctuations, adiabatic in nature.
Right. Which was put forward long before inflation arose.
Yes, but nevertheless, inflation is
one way of getting it.
One way of getting it. The first theory of structure formation based on quantitative causal physics, and it predicted a curve that fits with the present observation.
Could I ask you to say something about, I mean, behind this, there's not just the scale invariance, there's also the assumption of Gaussian, I mean, there's something.
No, that is independent of
That's independent?
Yeah. Because if you want to go after non-Gaussianness, you will plot different. This just gives you the spectrum, and whether the underlying field is Gaussian or not, that doesn't affect the spectrum. But there is an assumption that...
There is an assumption about what, independence of modes or something? No?
There's an assumption that it's adiabatic.
Should stress the fact that in this calculation, it's done at the surface of last sketch, 400,000 ideas out of the equation. And there's one number that comes in from inflation into the scale of spectral index. And then you have to put in the lambda CDU model, which is a.
Yeah, you need six parameters, but you fit lots and lots of inputs. And you see, I was working on. In the 90s, I was working on different models, topological defect models, and alternative class of theories for explaining the origin of inhomogeneities. These models are ruled out now, because they don't predict this nice feature. So I think one should, I mean, I've said a lot of negative things about inflation, so I think I should now stress the fact that these are observations, and inflation, even if it's only one way of getting it, it did get it right. And one could have hoped that the curve would have been slightly different. Okay. So.
Professor, could you explain again the origin of the subtropy of the CMB? It was just before you put the slide in, my technical comments. Yes.
Yeah. Right. Okay, so time, space, we look at photons reaching us today from different directions in the sky. If the density at last scattering is homogeneous, then there are no microwave anisotropies, because each photon travels the same distance. If there are density fluctuations, then we predict anisotropies, because different photons take different amount of time to travel to us. They are emitted with the same frequency, and therefore they arrive with different frequencies.
Because
the redshift, the change in the frequency, is proportional to the travel time.
Is that because recombination occurs at slightly different times?
That's one way to put it. Yeah.
Okay.
But
won't
there also be?
No, is that?
I mean, if the densities are different, that implies a different temperature as well, locally.
No, because you're using the cosmological equations.
No, I was just thinking if it was radiation dominated,
right,
then the temperature is you can trade the temperature for the energy density.
Right, but I'm saying that this surface is a surface of constant energy density, therefore of constant temperature.
Oh, okay.
And I'm exactly using the fact that constant temperature occurs at different times. And that means that now we look at the photons, they arrive at different frequencies.
Well, then aren't there sort of two effects? One is the redshift climbing out of the potential log of the photon, and the other is a local difference in the temperature. Are you saying they can both thought of as just the same thing in different language, or are they not two?
No, they are two different effects. I only discussed one. I'll come back in April.
So. I had another question, or two other questions, if possible. One is, do you know what Harrison and Zeldovich originally, how they motivated that spectrum? And the second question is, what are the six parameters that go into that fit?
Okay. So the initial motivation is you wanted a spectrum that did not diverge too badly, both in the infrared and the ultraviolet. That gave them that spectrum. And then the parameters are, there's the value of the cosmological constant, the deviation from exact scale invariance, because inflation is not exactly the sitter, so therefore H, the valuation, will be slightly time dependent. You describe that with the power, the value of that power. The ratio of baryons to dark, whole dark matter, So these are there are a couple more options.
But that one that describes the deviation from scale invariance is consistent with zero, is that right? Currently consistent with zero.
People call it actually consistent with one. That's scalar spectral index.
Yeah.
Okay, now, how is the analysis done? So, preview. So the first thing is that matter fluctuations are coupled to metric fluctuations via the Einstein constraint equation. So you have to introduce metric fluctuations. Then you have the action, which is the action for gravity plus the action for matter. Now you assume that matter and the metric is background plus fluctuations. Metric, metric fluctuations, matter, matter fluctuations. You do variable counting, you find that if you don't take into account gravitational waves, you subtract gravitational waves from the analysis, you have one variable. And it's a variable, it's one scalar field. So now the idea is that you take this action, you expand this action to quadratic order about the classical background. The linear terms cancel. And therefore, if you have a quadratic action for fluctuations, fluctuations are described by a single scalar field, what you'll end up with is the action for a single scalar field with a time-dependent mass. That's all you can get. You know without doing the calculation that the bottom line for the theory of fluctuations will be that if you focus on linear fluctuations, the linear fluctuations will be described by an action of a scalar field with a time-dependent mass. So what you now do is you assume that these fluctuations start out in their ground state, in the coordinate system set by the background. I guess I'm going.
So it is assuming that you neglect gravitational radiation? Or
to linear order, gravitational radiation is separate.
So you linear order in the action or in the equations of motion?
In equations of motion. To quadratic order in the action, gravitational waves are a separate term. You can analyze them as well, and the analysis is simple for gravitational waves. So I'm just not talking about them because they are less interesting in inflation. They are amplified less. So we have free scalar field action. We have a time-dependent mass. So what we now do is we treat the analysis Fourier mode by Fourier mode, because we do linear theory. We start out at the initial time, all modes in the ground state. And then what you will find is as long as the physical wavelength, wave number, is greater than h, as long as the physical wavelength is smaller than the Hubble radius, you will find vacuum oscillations. Not surprising, because on small wavelengths, you're essentially like in flat space. However, as soon as the physical wavelength becomes smaller than h, as soon as the wavelength becomes larger than the Hubble radius, you'll find squeezing. Squeezing